Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste is home, a little under the weather today. I hate to digress at the top of the show, but Xi Chang, one of our producers, just texted me. The Trenta that Starbucks is thinking of rolling out is 916 milliliters. That makes it larger than the capacity of the average human stomach. Take that to your water cooler today, folks. There's a little mini takeaway as we begin the program. You perhaps heard that yesterday a fellow by the name of Rudolf Elmer, he's a former executive with the Swiss bank Julian Baer, handed WikiLeaks' Julian Assange two computer disks yesterday at a news conference. Apparently, the disks contain over 2,000 individuals and companies that Elmer says have committed tax evasion and other crimes, and the evidence of that is on the disks. Assange says it'll be weeks until he reveals what's on those disks and whether anything is prosecutable. But first of all, we'll look at the allegation and then look at whether there is a tipping point in the entire WikiLeaks phenomenon where individuals come, deliver a news conference, and then hand over computer disks or documents of one kind or another, formerly secret, and now suddenly shown to the entire world through WikiLeaks. Louise Story is here, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner in the New York Times. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
And Christian Karl joins us, a Washington bureau chief for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. He's a contributing editor at Foreign Policy magazine and has a piece that I would recommend in the New York Review of Books called WikiLeaks Changes Everything. Mr. Karl, good morning.
Good morning.
First, Louise, describe these allegations and how they compare with the kinds of information that you yourself investigate on similar kinds of charges.
Well, yeah, this is every company's worst nightmare. You know, they turn on the news and they see a former employee standing there with Julian Assange passing over a disk. And so, you know, it's a little different from typical media because often I have sources come to me all the time, but they come to me privately.
Right.
And discreetly. I mean, it's a little unheard of for a reporter to be standing there with a source on stage. That's the whole point. We often protect sources' anonymity. But WikiLeaks seems to be coming to this thing where people who turn over to information to WikiLeaks also want credit for it and want to stand out there and say, here it is. If you remember Rudolf Elmer yesterday, he made these remarks that he wants the public to be educated. He wants the man on the street to know what's in these disks, to know about tax evasion. And so often when you take information to the government, so often it's handled very quietly. So he's going public.
Mechanisms that expose the secrecy of government and financial institutions are, according to some principle, at least implicit in WikiLeaks, is good for the world. That's what Julian Assange would have us believe. Normally, Christian Karl, the news conference would be the attorney general announcing indictments, and then we would see in a court of law whether any of that information stands. Now we've got the news conference announcing not even the accusations, but simply the handover of the disks. Is this some sort of transformational moment?
Well, I think it is. As I argued in the piece that you mentioned, I think that the technology has in some ways raced far ahead of the ethical and moral judgments that we usually make in these sorts of cases. You know, now we're at the point where you can transfer these vast troves of documents from a secret hard disk to, you know, a thumb drive with the flick of a wrist. It's become very, very easy to do these things. And my critique of WikiLeaks is based on the notion that I really wonder about the extent to which they are capable of making informed judgments about the information they're releasing, simply because in some cases the amounts of data are so vast. This particular case is especially interesting because this gentleman, Mr. Elmer, has apparently spent quite a lot of time shopping this information around to Swiss journalists, many of whom apparently passed. And he left his bank in 2004. These data are apparently fairly old, so it's not the kind of story that that a conventional journalist probably would accept at face value. It sounds like a very complex story with a lot of different things going on.
Let's hold on just for 1 second there. We're talking to Christian Karl, who's the Washington bureau chief for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the piece that I referred to at the top is called "Why WikiLeaks Changes Everything." It's in the New York Review of Books. Not the current issue, I think the last issue. But Louise Story, has WikiLeaks already changed the way you and other investigators at the Times do your jobs, or no?
You know, I don't think in a big way. I think it's more so running a fear through different corporations. And what I'm really interested in here is here's this Swiss bank, Julius Baer. They've already been out publicly trying to kind of slur the name of this guy. They're saying he's a disgruntled employee. So I'm kind of interested to see what the corporate playbook is for responding to WikiLeaks. We all know there might be some sort of Bank of America information. There's kind of that threat looming out there that WikiLeaks might have. And so watching how Julius Baer, the Swiss bank, tries to defend itself about whatever he gets out there will be informative in terms of what other companies might do.
Christian, Carl, it seems to me this fits into two categories, at least. On the one hand, you've got phenomena like the freedom movement going on in Tunisia, which was motivated at least in part by WikiLeaks revelations that the U.S. Believed that the government in Tunisia was corrupt and wasn't going to back it necessarily. You've also got WikiLeaks conveying just how upset middle-level security officers were with the Afghan strategy under the Obama administration. Those seem to be, if not benign, positive, at least in terms of the public good. But then you've also got a sort of Maoist idea of inform on your parents and improve the power of the party. What does WikiLeaks do here?
Well, I think you put it pretty well there. I think that freedom of speech is a good thing, John. There's no question about that. The problem is where you define the limits. For example, when WikiLeaks published its first batch of documents about Afghanistan, they didn't redact the names of a lot of people. And that, you know, could have put some people in mortal danger. These are the kinds of decisions that conventional news organizations make all the time. I'm sure that some of these revelations have had some sort of positive effect. They've certainly given us a lot of insight into areas we probably wouldn't have heard about otherwise. But again, one can only wonder about the extent to which the release of these data has been accompanied by real editorial oversight. In most cases, it doesn't look like it has.
If Andy Warhol was alive, perhaps, Christian Carl, he would say, everyone will be on WikiLeaks for 15 megabytes.
That's a good one.
Are we all there? I guess that's the...
I don't know. It sounds like we're pretty close to it. I do see an analogy here with the sort of Facebook phenomenon, right? It seems to me that you have to redefine your notion of privacy in an age when just anybody can spurt out their personal feelings and their intimate details of their lives to an audience of millions.
Well, it all becomes actionable in a sense, even though if it's not prosecutable. It's Christian Carl, Washington Bureau Chief for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, contributing editor at Foreign Policy, and Louise Story, Wall Street and Finance reporter for The New York Times. The latest from WikiLeaks. Thanks, Louise. Thanks, Christian.